Silence!
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Pride Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 50 of Nerd Pride Radio. 50, it's 2 times 5 squared, obviously. 50 is also the number of states in the union. That's all I got on 50, because you know what? I didn't do any research. More on that in a minute. Ask me how I'm doing today. Go on. Ask me. I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus probably like 7 other kinds of nerd. I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You're listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my head anymore. Oh, my co-host this week, longtime Nerd Pride Radio co-host number one, R2-D2. Welcome, R2. This is great. As it turns out, I haven't done any preparation at all. I am looking at a blank sheet here that says Nerd Pride Radio show title episode XX. That's all I got. I've got my formats. I've got my little scripts that I do for every episode. But other than that, there is absolutely nothing on here. I am playing it completely by ear. My son Noah, who you guys met in episode 5, is sick. And, well, he was sick, and then he had some breakfast, and now his stomach's not hurting so much, and I think he's going to be okay. So I've got a doctor's appointment to go get my thumb checked out. I think it's infected. Can you see that? It looks a little gross. So I'm going to go to the doctor and see if that's something I need to worry about. And then while I'm there, the school's right next door, I'll drop him off. He'll be fine. And so I figured, as long as I'm waiting for the doctor's appointment, I have got an hour here that I can put in an episode if I actually just sit down and do it. But that means no preparation. So you guys are going to get a lot of Podomatics today is what that means. But before we get to the Podomatics, updates. Hey, episode what, 2? What kind of monster am I of fingertips? Do you remember that one? I'm just assuming that this is all one big continuity and you guys listen to the bonus episodes and the regular episodes and you guys are all caught up with me. Episode 2 of Fingertips, I said, what kind of monster am I? And I talked about how I sent some nice complimentary stuff to Rob Balder, who creates Earthworld, and how he hadn't gotten back to me yet, and I'm just a horrible, horrible person for resenting him for not responding to what should have been a gracious gesture of appreciation. And then it turns out he responded to me. Like 2-3 days ago, he sends me an email, and in the email, he apologizes for it taking so long, and he says, hey, you know how it gets when you're really busy and you want to give something the time it deserves, and you kind of put it on the back burner and you forget about it for a little while? Well, that's what happened. It's almost as if he read my mind, because I said in that bonus episode, that's exactly what I said probably happened. Is that, look, he's a busy dude, and you know what? If it's not right there in your face, you kind of forget about stuff. So, as it turns out, I'm even more of an asshole than I described myself in that episode, and I feel terrible for ever having thought anything like that. Again, you reach out to somebody, and it should just be, again, this gesture of appreciation. It should be an unconditional kind of thing, that you reach out, you say something nice, and if they reply back, that's awesome. And if they don't, you know what? Hey, you still do a good thing for them. You still let them know how you feel. And that's what I did. And now, of course, I've got the feedback. So it gives me another chance to remind you guys that Earthworld, ERFworld.com, one of my favorite comics, one of my top 10, probably top 3 comics of all time. I love this thing. I've been following it for years. I can't get enough of it. I've met Rob in person at Gen Con, and he is a great guy. And I have signed books with a sketch from the artist for the comic, and it is Zin is her name. And I love Earthworld. You guys should check it out if you haven't already. Do I sound frantic? Do I sound a little rushed, a little over the top? Okay. There's two reasons for that. I'm trying to slow myself down. As I mentioned, I have about an hour, and so I want to get as much in as I can before we go. I'm going to try and make this a complete nonstop recording. There's not any segments that require any kind of music, so I don't have to look anything up. I don't have to be ready. I'm just going to record this one straight through and hopefully even just publish it tonight. All I got to do is slap on the closing music and we're done. So that's what I'm working on. But also, I stopped in at my office this morning for just a couple of minutes because there was a computer that needed some work, blah, blah, blah. And when I got to my desk, Yancey slams a can down on my desk, and it is a Monster Java. And I don't drink energy drinks. I've never tried. I've taken a sip of Monster to see what it tastes like, but I don't drink energy drinks. I've never had a whole can of one. But this one's a Monster Java, and you know, it would be rude not to try it. And so I pop this thing open, and holy crap, Monster Java is good. This was the Kona blend. He says there's also a vanilla bean he's tried that's really good. But Kona blend, whew, this stuff is great. And here's the deal. It tastes really good. Coffee flavor, but not bitter. I mean, just the right amount of coffee, and it's ice cold, and it's really good. And it's not caffeinated at all. So it goes down smooth. It's like I drank the whole thing. I'm sitting here thinking I'm just sipping it, but within 15 minutes I've got the entire thing gone. And so that means that I now have 188 milligrams of caffeine pumped into my system in about 15 minutes. I am jacked, people. I'm vibrating here. Can you see that? So I'm trying to temper it because I don't want this to be this frenetic episode that makes everybody nervous and throws you all over the edge. I want this to be fun like it always is, or at least it's fun for me. But man, I got a lot of caffeine going. So I'm going to try and cool it. I'm going to try and keep it on a nice even keel. If I start going too fast, somebody say something like that. And I'll try and cool it a little bit. But, what else? Oh, okay. Rob Balder. The other part I had in updates was, and maybe this one's more of an Oppenheimer sort of thing. But I had the, bonus episode mix up. I don't know if anybody caught it. I know Talvin did at least. I certainly did. Bonus episode number 6, fingertips number 6, should have been, what did I even talk about in bonus episode number 6? God, my mind is just gone. I am just absolutely losing it today. No, that's right. It was what Jeff said where I finished up that fingertips that didn't get finished. Yeah, bonus episode number 6, I posted it up on like Tuesday, and it turned out that I accidentally left in the link to episode number 5, which was the Noah episode with Super Mario 3D World. And so I wound up having the wrong podcast up there. So finally I caught it. I corrected it that afternoon. And then what happens? Ah, crap. Train. I'm going to pause for a second. And I'm back. And so, I fixed the link and I had it point to number 6. And then it turns out that number 6, oh crap. I had accidentally encoded it with episodes 5 and 6 stuck together. So you still wound up having to listen to Noah again. Finally by Wednesday morning, I got that fixed completely. And now everything should be right. But yeah, whatever. But anyway, why so many fingertips lately? Why I've suddenly started coming up with bonus episodes, and I'm doing a lot of them for that first week to this week. Why? Well, one, they're super easy to do. Oh, holy crap. I can sit down and kick out, you know, one or two of those in a matter of 15 minutes. And literally the moment they're done, it takes me all of 30 seconds to brush them up, encode them, you know, get the music stuck onto them, and they're ready to post immediately. They're easy to record, so I can have a bunch of them set aside. So what I'm hoping is when it comes down to this summer, because you guys know summer, I always kind of punk out on the podcast. Not kind of. I completely punk out on the podcast over the summers. I'm hoping that these bonus episodes can help fill some of that. If I can do one or two of those a week, I'm hoping to still do full episodes. You know, my kids are getting more involved with them, and they can help me out, and so it's not as difficult to do them while everyone's home. But yeah, you know me, I have a tough time, you know, getting the time to put them together over the summer. So hopefully, even if I don't have full episodes, I can still have some bonus episodes and still have some regular content trickling in over the summer. And this is something that Zim has suggested to me on more than one occasion, and I've just never actually gotten around to putting it together. So we'll see how it all pans out. I'm just kind of speculating out loud here. So is it time for the Podomatic yet? No. Mike was wrong. That's right. It's time for yet another installment in our all too frequent segment, Mike Was Wrong. In the Noah episode number 5, Fingertips, he was talking about Super Mario 3D World for the Wii U. And at one point in it, and I've listened to this thing twice now, and it kills me every time, I said something about the original Super Mario World on Nintendo 64. And I knew it was wrong after I said it, and I didn't correct it. And every time I listen to it, it's like a needle in my brain because I know it's wrong. Super Mario World was actually a regular 2D platformer that was on the Super Nintendo, and the game I was thinking of was Super Mario 64, which was on the Nintendo 64, and it was one of the first 3D platformers, maybe the first 3D platformer for Mario, I don't know for sure. And then and that one was pretty good. It starts off in the huge castle, and you wind up jumping through paintings to get into the different worlds, whatever, whatever. Loved that game. And then I think the next big one was Super Mario Sunshine, which was on the GameCube, I think. And that one was more of the big 3D world kind of things, and was also really good. So, forget what I said there. I knew what I was talking about, and I said the wrong thing, and it's just been killing me that I even have to fess up to that. I was wrong. I'm sorry. There. Now that's done. So, no meticulously plotted portion of the podcast, because I haven't done any meticulous plotting at this point in the week. We'll get back to that one with episode 51. And no movie quote, because I haven't bothered to look anything up. So that means Pod-O-Matic! Hi, R2. Good to see you. Hot dog, this is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 in his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble. He rolls up random topics for me to talk about, and where do those topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you guys come in, and you do it in a huge way. You guys want me to hear me haver on about something, you send your question, your topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on our forums. I add it to my Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic then becomes whatever you want it to be. And again, you guys have sent me a ton of them. I have got more than 300 Podomatic entries still in here with more coming in. I am so happy. So we'll get straight into it. R2 has given me the number 44. Number 44 is from Kyle. Kyle says, I don't get Fraggles. Why was it okay for them to exploit the labor of the doozers and just screw around all day? Was Jim Henson some kind of capitalist libertarian trying to brainwash us as kids? Okay, no. Here's the deal, is that this is just the natural order of society. You don't understand. Doozers, if you give them complete and total freedom, doozers want to build things. They want to maintain the environment for the Fraggles. That's what brings them joy. That's where they're happiest. That's why they do it. So I say if you give them complete and total freedom, but the truth is they already have complete and total freedom. No one has enslaved them. No one is forcing them to be there. They want to do that. They are the definition of order. Whereas the Fraggles are the chaotic to the doozers lawful. All right, we've got doozers who are lawful good, Fraggles who are chaotic good, and it all balances out. You need both to have a fully functioning society. You don't see that? What's wrong with you, man? Does it teach a potentially bad lesson? Maybe so, because the Fraggles are clearly the good guys, the fun guys, the ones we want to be. And while they learn life lessons along the way, very rarely did those lessons require any sort of hard work. Mostly it was just stumbling through adventure. So, I don't know, man. That they're just puppets. Now, you know what, R2? I am suspecting. All right, guys, because we've got the new R2 sounds, because I figured out the on-off switch goes in both directions. I figured out that we have an on-off switch, and then it turns out if I flip it in this direction, I get all sorts of new sounds we've never heard. but I'm suspecting that the sounds get played in the exact same order every time. I think there's just a loop, whereas the setting I had it on for years and always had it there because I didn't realize it was a switch. That setting apparently has popped out random sounds, and it had like 6 or 7 or 8 of them or whatever they were, but they came up in a random order, and that's not happening anymore. I think these are preset as I've played with it. So we'll find out more as we go along. But anyway, back to the entries. R2 has given us a 52, which is from Zimny. If you could throw a parade of any caliber, what type of parade would it be? Probably a small parade, like 22 caliber. I don't know. That's just an odd use of the word caliber for me. I get what you're saying, though. Not that the question is nonsensical, Zim, just that that's not how I would have used the word caliber. So therefore, it makes me want to make puns. What kind of parade would I throw? That is a great question. A huge parade with, I'm sitting here doing shtick. I want to go with chicks and guns and fire trucks, but, you know, none of you have seen Bachelor Party, so you have no idea what I'm talking about. Bachelor Party, early Tom Hanks movie, back when Tom Hanks was considered a small-time comedic actor, and that's all he was, before he was the 2-time, 3-time Oscar winner that he is today. What kind of parade would I throw? Well, obviously, I'm throwing a Nerd Pride parade because that's what I have to do. And despite all of our intentions, it would probably be a relatively small parade, but not insignificant. I mean, it would be one that we would all turn out for, and we'd have a great time, and, you know, you'd have your Dungeons & Dragons float, and then you'd have your Star Wars float, because you've got to have a Star Wars float, and then your Trekker float or Trekkie float, however you want to do it. I would even want to throw in a hipster float, but unfortunately there'd be no one on it because seriously, like, they're going to participate in that stuff. Everyone's doing that. I don't know. Okay. And before I get to this one, here we are right about the 17-minute mark, and my computer has a low battery, so I just plugged it in. I normally record without the power being connected because I have a suspicion that the power cord is part of what causes a little interference, gives me a little static, a little buzz sometimes. So if we start having some sound quality issues after this point, I am really, really sorry. I'll unplug this as soon as it's got enough charge. But hey, this will be a good experiment for us, see if that's really where some of that problem is coming from. In the meantime, R2 has given us a 76 from Stan. I'm reading ahead. Stan says, do you have any action figures near your work computer? Oh, take a guess. What do you think? Of course I do. Holy crap. I have got, in front of my computer, I have three, these aren't action figures, but I have three, see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil monkeys. I've got them lined up in front of the computer. Across the top of the computer, I have two 24-inch or 26-inch monitors. So I've got a giant dual monitor set up on my desk. And the entire top edge of both of these monitors is lined with little Star Wars action figures. The little mini ones, they're kind of half-size. They're from Christmas time, and they've got the big feet so that they stand up well. They're like little kids' versions, as if Star Wars action figures aren't already for little kids. But you know what I mean. And I've got a whole bunch of those. Originally, my family just bought me a set of Christmas ones, so I had Darth Vader and Boba Fett and a Stormtrooper in a Christmas set. And so they came with, I mean, here's the three of them all standing up, but then they also came with, like, little Christmas lights and a wreath that could attach to their guns and hang on the lightsaber and this kind of stuff. And it was really cute. And so I'd break them out every Christmas and, you know, I'd have them up all year long, but then every Christmas I'd get out the Christmas decorations that attached to the figures, and I always thought that was really cute. And so it kind of became a tradition that every Christmas in my stocking, I get a new set of Star Wars action figures to go on top of my monitors. And now, I don't think I got any this last Christmas because I think I have as many as I'm going to get. I mean, I've got like a good 20 of them lined up along there. So A, I'm out of room, and B, are there any left that are still cool? I don't, you know. So I got those. On the shelf next to my desk and on the bookshelves behind my desk. I used to have a lot more. I had some superheroes, and I had some Doctor Who figures, and I had little mini figures, and I had giant figures. And eventually I got kind of cluttered, and so I just kind of swept it all off there, and I've left just the row of Star Wars ones up top, and the rest of them are put away in a drawer for right now. But I'll break them out later. But like I say, it just got to the point where it was cluttered. I had a collection of all of the Star Wars bobblehead figures from McDonald's that each one was a character from Star Wars with a vehicle, and then the bobblehead for the character was mounted on top of the vehicle. It was just bizarre, but I had a bunch of those. Hold on. Cough button's working. Yes, I have Star Wars action figures as well as other action figures all around my workspace. Number 47. This one is Kyle again. Kyle says, you talked about normally putting your left shoe on first, but that you're not wedded to that. My question is, are you a sock-sock-shoe-shoe person or a sock-shoe-sock-shoe person? Also, do you tie your shoe once you put it on, or do you put both shoes on before you tie one of them? Okay. First, it is always socks first, and then after both socks are on, then I do shoes. I can imagine that there are some rare cases where I have put on a sock and a shoe, and then another sock and a shoe. But in general, socks first, then shoes. I don't know why, because, you know, I'm a big fat guy, and hauling that leg up there where I can reach it is probably a ton of work for me. You'd think I'd want to conserve energy by putting on the sock and shoe first, and then laboriously putting that leg back down and then hauling the other one back up. You would think so, but that's not how I do it. It's always socks first, then shoes. As far as tying them, I very rarely wear shoes that I have to tie. Most of my shoes are slip-ons, if I can manage it, because I'm lazy. But if I do have shoes that tie, no, I always put the shoe on and tie it, and then get the other foot, put the shoe on, and then tie it. Because the only way I would not do it in that order would be if I could just walk into my shoes, like they're both sitting on the floor. I could step into both of them comfortably and then one at a time tie them. But I don't do that. I actually pull my shoes on because I don't like stepping into shoes even when they're slip-ons, because I'm wearing down the backs when I do that. I hate crushing the back of the shoe trying to squeeze my foot in there. I would much rather just pick my damn foot up, put the shoe on with my hands, and use my thumb to make sure I'm pulling it appropriately around my heel so I'm not crushing my shoe. That's the best way to do it, in my opinion. Number 78. Thank you, R2. It is from Billy Bob. Facial hair, awesome or douchey hipster? Facial hair is, it just depends on how you do it. My facial hair is awesome. I've got a full beard. I'm going full beard, and I shave my neck because I hate the neck beard, and I also shave the upper half of my cheeks, the wolf hairs, as my brother calls them. But otherwise, very neatly trimmed full beard, and I wear it longer than I used to. So on my little cheap electric razor from Target, my shears, as it were, I have them set. I put the guard in, and I set it for about a 6. When I trim it, and then I trim it, and then I don't bother to do anything with it for about 2 or 3 weeks until the neck hairs start really bugging me because they're starting to fill in. And then I'll shave the neck, shave the cheeks, and then 6 guard brings it down. So I keep it long enough that it stays soft. So it's still kissable. That's the whole point, ladies. But there's lots of facial hair that is douchey. I actually saw my first real life when I went to the Real Big Fish concert, my first real life, waxed mustache, like the classic, you know, Victorian era waxed mustache that actually came out and curled out on the ends. And this guy put a lot of work into it. Of course, he was also wearing a double-breasted suit and an old-timey, I don't know if it was a fedora or not, but he had a proper hat on to match his suit. And he was wearing that to a Real Big Fish concert. So he's the kind of guy who would have a waxed curly mustache. Clearly that was douchey hipster. I'll give you that one. It just depends on how you do it. You know what the problem is? Real quick, as I was watching that guy and I saw his little curled mustache, I thought, God, that would suck. That would so suck, because one of the things I hate most about the facial hair is I hate when the mustache gets into the, it gets just long enough that it keeps sticking in the corners of your mouth. I hate that. I hate it. I don't like it getting in my mouth at all. And if you've got one of those mustaches that you have to wax and curl, then any day that you decide that you're not going to bother with the mustache wax, any day that you just want to have a lazy day, then you've got the corners of your mustache. You're going to have this neatly trimmed mustache, walrus crap, this stringy, droopy crap that's going to come down and constantly be getting in your mouth there. You can't go a day without waxing it unless you're willing to put up with having your mustache in your mouth all damn day. That's ridiculous. But then, yeah, again, it depends on the facial style. It's, you know, because nowadays I used to wear the Van Dyke, do the mustache and goatee bit together. And now mustache goatee is really the purview of 40-year-old dorky dads. That's, you know, I mean, when you watch, and I realized it when I was watching my kids' cartoons, and when you're watching a cartoon and you see a character with a Van Dyke in a cartoon, it's because it is somebody's dad or somebody's principal or somebody's, it's some authority figure who is trying to be cool but is actually just kind of dorky. That's just the way those things go. So, you know, they all have their categories. But if you want really cool facial hair, full beard, dude, because it's manly and rugged. There you go, number 8. All the way up to the top is Mr. Zimney Pot again. Zimney says, favorite fruit for a camping trip? I don't know. I don't eat much fruit. For me personally, bananas. I love bananas. They keep well. They come with their own protective shell to peel off. Oranges do the same thing. But I just like bananas. That would be my favorite fruit on a camping trip. However, when we do go camping, we tend to bring apples. And we bring lots of different fruit. Apples is the most common one, and I think apples because they travel really well, and if they get bumped around a little bit because you're traveling and things are shaking around, whatever. Apples don't get hurt as easily as some other fruits. I mean, grapes are nice, but then you always have loose grapes rolling around in the bottom of your thing. The oranges are nice, but then, God, especially depending on where you are, they've got orange peels that you now have to dispose of or do something with, or I don't know. Yeah, whatever works. Fruit is fruit. Number 55 from Stan. Stan says, have you ever stepped on a Di-4 barefoot? Yeah, that hurts. They're like caltrops. They are the gaming world's natural caltrops, and they hurt like heck. I hate, and you know what? I have stepped on a Di-4 sometimes in the middle of my living room. Because my kids can leave them out like any other toys, even though they're my dice. It's not true. They all have their own sets of dice, but darn it, that's not the ones that they pull out to play with. No, they pull out mine, jerks. But yes, I have stepped on all sorts of dice barefooted, and the D4 is clearly the worst. Number 27. This one is from Kyle. Kyle says, if you could interview any marginal celebrity for the podcast, meaning someone that you and the podcast audience would recognize, but not your parents or in-laws, who would it be? Whoa. That is a great question that I have to stall for time for. Off the top of my head, look, you and I already interviewed Felicia Day for our old podcast, and that was our big coup of all the guests that we had on, and we had some really good ones. Felicia Day was probably the biggest name that we interviewed, and as our biggest name, she was still in this category of marginal celebrity, the kind of person that, yeah, most people aren't going to recognize her, but those of us who are in the gaming world, in the nerd world, we all know who she is. So that kind of person, I would love to interview Felicia Day again, for all that matters. You know what? Even Will Wheaton. I would love to interview Will Wheaton, although he's still a marginal celebrity. He's still the kind of person that our parents, in-laws would go, who? And we'd say, yo, he was on Star Trek, the Next Generation. They go, oh, okay, one of those, whatever. But I don't have any personal favorite, I don't think. I mean, it's not like a big get that I'm looking for, because to me, if I decided to have guests, any guest of that nature would be awesome. I mean, we're talking about people that that are accessible because they're not giant stars yet, that they still, maybe they read all their own email, or if they're not reading all their own email, they're on a close basis with the person who does, and so therefore that they get to see the stuff that's important or the stuff that, you know, you would think is important. But I don't know. I don't know. Off the top of my head, I've got nothing. That's a good one. I say I'll post this as a thread in the forums, and then I probably won't remember to do that. But that would be a great thread, is the what sort of guest should Nerd Pride Radio be looking for the podcast? That's actually a really good question. Oh, I like that one. That is number one from Zimnipot. Of course, Zimny's number one. And Zimny says, what weaknesses should a zombie have in games? To me, zombie weaknesses normally should be headshot will destroy them. Once you take out the brain, they're done. Although, that would also indicate that on a zombie, any spine shot should effectively paralyze that zombie from that portion of the spine down. That, I mean, you know, if all it takes is a connection to the brain for the body to keep going, and that's why headshots take them out effectively, then you would think a spine shot would paralyze them. So, I mean, that's reasonable. It also means, you know, a good neck shot, and all you've got is a living zombie head, which is cool by me. Other weaknesses? None, really. I mean, slow. I like slow zombies. Although I also really enjoy movies with fast zombies as well, so it's not like it's, you know, set in stone or nothing. But yeah, certainly a headshot should be able to take out a zombie. And typically the fact that they are slow and that we can outthink and outmaneuver them, hopefully, is our few advantages against the zombies. Because other than that, they have the advantage of huge mass numbers and incredible infection rates. So that, you know, yeah, they may be slow and shambling, but all it takes is for one of that mob to get a tooth on you or a claw, if depending on the world you're in, and suddenly you're one of them. So that's where we go. I mean, the absolute scariest would be, you know, the 28 Days Later zombies, the super fast and, Jesus, virtually any contact with body fluid, and boom, you're one of them instantly. Holy crap. That's scary stuff. But that would also be, at least in 28 Days Later, that would be the reason that, at least, I don't remember now. I saw 28 Days Later. I thought I saw 28 Weeks Later. But isn't that why it didn't spread off the island? Isn't that why it didn't get out of Britain? Is because the transmission, the infection is so fast that it's not like you could have an airplane or a boat that had a zombie on it that you didn't know about, unless someone was intentionally bringing it across. You know what I mean? So, but that's it. That's it. I don't know. That's zombies for me. What? Oh, I love the new noises. Number 61. Roll down. Also from Zimny. If you could travel through time, where would you go? I don't know. Where would I go if I could travel through time? You know what? You guys know my favorite moment in history, absolute favorite moment in history, is 1066 England. I love 1066, but do I want to go visit there? Because that seems like a really dangerous place to be. You know, and I think, and for a moment I was about to say, well, at least I speak the language, but you know what? I really don't. That would have been, what, Old English in 1066? Is that Old English or Middle English? Anyway, it would be fairly incomprehensible at this point. I don't know where I'd like to go if I could travel in time. Oh, you know what? No, I do. Why am I thinking historically? Let's go visit the future. Holy crap. You know what? If I could travel in time, let's go forward in time, and we'll do it like they did on Futurama, where you can roll forward a few hundred years or a few thousand years, a few million years, but you roll forward, you stop, you go, yeah, no, not this world, keep going, and then find one that looks exciting and pleasant, survivable, and interesting, and stop there and see what happens. All with the condition that, you know, I've got a backwards time machine available so that I can go back to where I came from. Because as it is right now, I am currently traveling in time, but I'm only doing so at a rate of moving forward 1 second per second. So, it's a really slow time machine, and it's the same one everyone's on, so, not as effective. But yeah, no, I would go to the future and just see. How exciting is that? Holy cow. I don't like that one as much, but we'll take it. Number 52. This one's from... We've had a 52 already. Yeah, that's from Zimny. Okay, hold on. Number 99. Number 99 is... Akiva! Akiva, who is the worst person you've ever met? And then follow-up question, who's the best person you've ever met? You know what? I am going to take a pass on this question. I don't like this question because, let me see if I can do this. The worst person I've ever met is, off the top of my head, there's a guy I currently know. And I don't even want to say where I know him from because people listen to this podcast and I don't want to talk bad about somebody. But there's a guy I currently know who just doesn't, he's maybe not the worst person I've ever met. Because, you know, I've also met, I work in a facility full of sex offenders. So, there's some pretty bad guys up there. I mean, I've got, you know, child molesters and rapists, in the same building I'm in. So there's some pretty bad people there, but, you know, people that I've actually met and worked with one-on-one and have, you know, some knowledge of, it's this guy. And I wish I could explain why. It's kind of the man is just willful ignorance defined and intentionally, belligerently ignorant about stuff. And it drives me crazy. Oh, what a bad person. As far as the best person that I've ever met, well, that's easy. That's my wife. She's awesome. Number 58. There's Zimny Pot. I need to screen these before I start rolling. Number 58 says, how much do you love that crazy Zimny guy? Come on. Don't be shy. Oh, how I love him. Zimny is awesome. Zimny is probably my most fervent, loyal fan. He has written sweet, tender, romantic fan fiction about my podcast. He has contributed more Podomatics than any human being in history. He's Swedish. Did I mention that part? Which means the pictures I have of him are not very clear, because he's posted pictures of himself before and they mostly feature his blanket. But I assume that being Swedish means he's gorgeous, because all Swedish people are. They are actually, go check the stats. And, being judged by, I'm sure it's being judged by other Westerners, but in studies that they've done, Swedish people, Scandinavian people in general, have rated consistently the most attractive people in the world. So, you know, Zim is just one of those. Probably a very good example of that, I would imagine. So I love him. He's awesome. I don't know what this podcast would do without Zimny Pot. Number 38. Wow, we still have one left over from Sirius Paul. All right, Paul. Wonder Woman versus Buffy. Besides drooling fanboys, who wins? Wonder Woman versus Buffy, I am going to give that one to Wonder Woman, because while Buffy is pretty powerful, I think Wonder Woman has years of experience over her, at least as much fighting skill, and she's stronger. Wonder Woman is just faster and stronger than Buffy. Buffy is fast and strong, but Wonder Woman is stronger. That's just the way it is. The woman can deflect bullets, for God's sake. She's pretty good. And Wonder Woman has the advantage of not being a vampire. So while I love them both, Yeah, that one's not really much of a contest for me. maybe they are random. 65 from Mr. Zimney again. Do you laugh a lot? Hell yes, I laugh a lot. I laugh all the time. I laugh every day. I enjoy laughing. I enjoy smiling. I enjoy stuff around me. I try to put myself in situations where there's going to be things that make me laugh. I try and put myself in situations where I'm going to be surrounded by things that I enjoy and I have fun with. I love the people I work with, for the most part. I love my family and the people around me. I enjoy this podcast and you guys on the internet. I'm a happy guy a lot. I mean, you know, I have my moments, but in general, I enjoy my life. I enjoy what I do, and it's a good time. And so, yeah, I laugh all the time, and it's fun for me. One would hope that laughing by definition would be fun, but I suppose, you know, there's that fake polite laugh that you do, and everybody's really good at that. But I don't enjoy that one so much. That's the painful go-away laugh. But no, most of my laughs are pretty genuine, and I enjoy laughing. I do it all the time. Number 92. This is from Stan. Stan says, which is your favorite of the old comedy duos? Abbott and Costello. I am such a fan of Who's On First. I am such a fan of some of their... Abbott and Costello, I think, have the material that I like the best. I mean, most of that stuff doesn't hold up as well as it used to. I don't know Burns and Allen very well. I only know old George Burns, and I've seen clips and heard bits from the early stuff. I've never actually seen Burns and Allen in action. Laurel and Hardy. Laurel and Hardy are my favorite in concept because there's just something fascinating about them, and I think Stan Laurel is just absolutely brilliant. The man... just a genius, I like Laurel and Hardy, but I've never seen a lot of Laurel and Hardy. Let me change my mind. If they will qualify, because they used to do bits together, and they have been lifelong friends, and they've worked together forever, Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner. While not one of your classic comedy duos, you know, Brooks and Reiner is not a name that jumps to mind like Laurel and Hardy, Abbott and Costello, Burns and Allen, but Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner, I have always liked both of these men. I've always liked their work. I've always thought they were very funny, talented, wonderful human beings. And then after hearing first the Mel Brooks and then the Carl Reiner interviews with Mark Maron on the WTF podcast, I have completely fallen in love with those two guys. They're just wonderful. And in fact, I just heard, since I'm going back and listening to Harmontown, Maron was on Harmontown right after he recorded those episodes, so he hadn't even aired them yet. And he was on Harmontown, and he was talking about them, and I was reminded about how much I loved that experience. And I just thought Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner were just brilliant, and I love those guys, and I think everything they've ever done is consistently really funny, except for Robin Hood Men in Tights. But other than that, really good stuff. So those would be my favorite. If you're not going to qualify them as a comedy duo, then I'll go with Abbott and Costello, but Brooks and Reiner. That would be number 60. Now that we've done. Let's see. Number 2. This is all the way up. This is from Billy Bob. Billy Bob says, would you describe yourself as more racist or more sexist? Oh, that's... what is wrong with you? I don't know. Right, clearly, because I am neither racist nor sexist, obviously. And certainly not homophobic. But you didn't even offer that as an option, so we don't even have to consider homophobic at this point. I am probably more racist than I am sexist. And not saying that I'm either one of those things, but I have more insecure about my feelings on race and my position on race in such that when I see a person of color who is strange to me, who I'm not familiar with, my mind will often automatically point out and go, oh, hey, a black guy. Oh, hey, look, a Hispanic dude. All right. Or woman, either way. And then I have to chastise myself and go, well, yeah, but how is it relevant that they're, well, and then I try and justify, well, because I live in a town where we really don't have a large black population. So to note the fact that they're black is because it's unusual to be here. And I'm going, all right. And so am I actually racist and do I treat them any differently? No, if anything, you probably got some of the overcompensating reverse racism going on with me that, you know, I would be the kind who would want to bend over backwards to make sure that I'm not doing anything that could be construed or misconstrued as being racist. When, I don't know. It's typical mixed up white guy guilt. I have no idea. It's the kind of thing where you're so hyper aware of it because you don't want to offend anybody when really, should you even be thinking about it at all? So, yeah, I'm more aware of race, in that sense. Sexism, yeah, there's still, you know, there's always some inherent sexism, I suppose, and a lot of it's in language and stuff. That, you know, the terms we use, and I've worked really hard to break myself of those. You know, the kind of language that implies that being feminine, is somehow an insult or somehow less than being a man. And, you know, it's really ingrained into our culture. It is really hard to get away from. But yeah, if I had to pick one of the two, it would probably be racist, but I like to think that I'm neither. So there. Does that work for you? Excellent. Number 61 again. Are you serious with me? We just had that one and it was still wrong then. Crime Netleys. Oh, number 33. This one says, it's from Billy Bob again. If you love Method One characters so much, why don't you marry one? Go on, roll one right now. Go on, roll one right now and then marry it. I dare you. Okay, hold on. Give me a second. Pause, and then I'll pull up my spreadsheet. Oh, there you go. Got it. I have a spreadsheet entitled Method 1 Generator. I open the sucker up, and here is the top line. It actually generates several thousand characters at once because I was doing some compiling of statistics. But the very top line on my Method 1 Generator. Oh, and this one's going to be an easy one. Holy crap. Strength 15, Dex 16. Already, we are right in there. Constitution 9. All right. Intelligence 13, Wisdom 8, Charisma 10. Oh, this is so easily playable. This isn't even a challenge. That would be a ranger who focuses on a compound bow that can take advantage of his strength bonus to damage because he gets a +2 on it. So, or alternately, a rogue who also takes advantage of that bow. With the strength damage, because he's got enough intelligence that, yeah, he get a little bit of bonus to skills. He's got the great dex, certainly a ranged fighter of some sort. This one was super easy. I don't even need this one. God, in fact, you know what? If you want to make it even better, then you could make it. What is it? Elves? Elves get a charisma bonus, or do they get an intelligence and dex bonus? I can't remember what bonuses they get. Darn it! Because yeah, if you could get. If you get someone who gets the intelligence bonus as well to get the little extra points and skills for your rogue, that would be awesome. All right, that one was clearly way too easy. Let's try one more time. Hold on. Refresh. All right, and ready. The top line. Nope, it didn't refresh. I'm not doing very well here. Okay, I'm sorry. I should be talking here. And I'm not. So give me just a second. I realize I need to adjust those settings. I hit a refresh. All right, here we go. Oh, this one's a killer. Top line, strength of 13. Sweet. But dex of 4. Strength of 13. So I get +1 on my strength, but a dex of 4. That's almost unworkable. Holy crow. And then all the rest of them are average. Constitution 10, intelligence 8, wisdom, charisma 10, 11. So, you have to work with your strength being your only real bonus, but then having no dexterity to speak of, like a minus -4 modifier on strength. No, -3 modifier on strength. That's horrifying. Or on dexterity, I mean. That one's terrible. But I would make that one a straight-up half-orc fighter, and I would make him the clumsiest fighter in the world. So I would put the strength bonus, or the bonus from half-orc, I'd put it onto strength, give him a 15, and so he would be halfway decent with his sword, but he'd have no armor class and no initiative to speak of. So he would be slow, ponderous, tripping over his own feet, but not bad with his axe or whatever it is he's hitting with. Yeah, we'll give him a big old two-handed weapon, and make him really stereotypical. But, and of those two, I'll marry the half-orc. I have no problem with that. Sweet. Hold on. I have to get off of my method one generator and get back to my Potomatic list. And then I go, damn it. Why am I not finding anything? Oh, there's my Potomatic list. Sweet. I have a number 10, which is from Talvin. Hey, Talvin. Nice to see you on this list. Axis of Anarchy or Knights of Good? Well, this is a guild question, speaking of Felicia Day and Will Wheaton. And the Knights of Good, clearly. Look, they're a bunch of dorks, and they've got some infighting, and they've got some real issues going on. But Knights of Good, that's the way to go with it. The Axis of Anarchy and Will Wheaton, they're a bunch of douches, really. And clearly douches. And none of them had any personality except for Will Wheaton anyway. So the Knights of Good are way more interesting. All right, I'm going to have to put it on pause now. How many minutes are we in? Oh, hey, look, we're at 51. This is going to come up a little bit short, but you know what? That's just fine. I got to get to that doctor's appointment. So let me roll down to the credits and say, hey, it's time for a recap.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2014 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. If you feel like doing something nice for this podcast, head on over to iTunes and write me a nice review, or check out my Facebook page at facebook.com/nerdprideradio. Stop at my Facebook page. Click like. It's just 9 seconds out of your busy day. You can do that for a friend. Don't forget to check out all the free games that I have available on my free games page. I have Instant Game. I have Animal Ball Melee. I have Sandbox Hill. 2/3 of a dozen others. All free, all awesome, all the time. If you want to contact me, you can always email me at mike@nerdprideradio.com, and I promise I will actually respond to you. But to be totally honest, the very best way to talk to me is to come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. You sign up there, you send me a message, we will hang out together, we'll be best friends in the world, and we will have fun. Oh, make it a good one. Number 18 is Kyle. There is no place for the kazoo in real non-joke music, is there? Well, funny you should ask that. I would have agreed with you completely and said, no, of course you can't have a kazoo in non-joke music. That's all the thing is good for, until I saw Biebs and her Moneymakers at the Real Big Fish concert, and they sell kazoos up at the front stand with their t-shirts because they've got a song that features an opening kazoo, and it's not a joke song, and it's not a joke that they have a kazoo in it. It's fun and lighthearted, but it's not a joke. It's a great song. I can't remember the name of it, otherwise I would quote it for you here. But no, they did. It was great. I loved listening to that. Awesome stuff. So you can make it work. You just gotta have the right attitude. That's all. One more time. Let me explain what's going on here. I told you that was going to be the end. I've already run the credits. I've said my goodbyes. I did everything. And then I went off to my doctor's appointment, had my thumb checked out, got my kid taken back to school. And now work isn't expecting me for a little bit longer. And so, here I am thinking that, you know what, that podcast I put together, that episode 50 that I put together, that was crap. That was absolute crap. I was frenetic. I was off my game. I wasn't thinking straight. I was concentrating so hard on sounding normal that I think I sounded really weird. It was just bad. And this may surprise you, or maybe it won't. I think that every time I record a podcast, there's maybe out of the 50, this is number 50, out of the 50 podcasts I've done and the bonus episodes I've done, maybe three times I've gotten done and went, wow, that went really well. Holy crap, that may be one of my best ever. And then afterwards I listen to it and go, oh, well, it was all right. Most of the time I get done recording and my first thought when I get done recording is, wow, that sucked. Oh God, that sucked. I can't believe it. I'm going to have to redo it. I think that a lot. I'm like, you know, I've never redone a podcast before, but I'm going to have to redo this one. I can't put that out there. That's subpar. That's not, my fans deserve better than that. And then I never do because I'm lazy. And so I wind up just, I do the edits, I put the thing up, and then I finally listen to it after I've published it, and then after I listen to it, I go, oh, actually, that turned out really well. I didn't, you know, that was kind of charming. I'm good with that. Okay, so I'm hoping that the beginning part of this podcast is exactly that. I'm hoping that all of my scatterbrained bullshit nonsense, I hope, comes across as charming. Maybe, if I'm lucky. But in the meantime, like I say, it came up a little short. I feel like it was subpar. And so I've decided I've got a little extra time. I'm going to fill up this time with a little extra bonus Podomatic for you guys. And since I already said my goodbyes, we've already ended the podcast. What that means is at some point in this process, maybe I'll do one, maybe I'll do 12, maybe I'll do 100. Who knows? But at some point, I'm going to feel like I've earned an ending to this show, and I'm just going to stop. So be prepared. It'll come out of nowhere when you least expect it. Question number one. Oh, hold on. Ooh, number 40. It's from me. Hey, question number one from me is, so what happened with your thumb? Oh, dude, this is terrible. My thumb has been swelling up, along the edge of the nail here. And, at first it felt like a little hangnail, even though it's not, and I haven't been biting my nails, and then it just keeps swelling and swelling, and now it's all bruised, and it's hurting really bad, and then last night before I went to bed, I could feel like pain was shooting down my wrist. I'm like, oh God, this is spreading, my hand's gonna rot off, I need to go see the doctor. It's been 4 days. And so I go see the doctor, and, it's a staph infection more than likely. He says it's extremely common. And he says the danger is that there might be a pus pocket in there, and a lot of times when it's under the nail, the pus pocket can't drain properly, and so it leaks underneath the skin, and it gets in your bloodstream, and you'll get the red streaks, and the infection spreads to the rest of your body. He says that could be really bad, so we need to check for a pus pocket and see if we can drain it out if it's there. And to check for the pus pocket, he takes the most swollen portion of my thumb and stabs it with a scalpel. And fortunately, there was no pus underneath. He stabbed me for nothing, and I just bled all over his exam room, which is fine, which is just fine. And it was really painful, but yeah, not the worst thing that's happened to me at a doctor's office. I can handle that. And so anyway, turns out that the infection is just in the tissue right now. There's no pus to deal with. He's prescribed me an antibiotic. I'm going to pick that up and take it with my lunch here in just a minute, and everything will be just fine. So he says it'll clear up in 2-3 days. No big deal. Just take the medicine until it's done. Awesome. But the interesting part of this whole visit to me, other than getting stabbed with the scalpel, which was horrible, is the term for my condition, which is paronychia. Paronychia is a very common condition, and quite literally, paronychia translates from Latin as para, next to, nick, nail, and ia is the indicator for infection. So it's infection next to your nail. Well, I knew that. See, that's the thing. I go to the doctor and I say, yeah, you know what? I got this swelling here. I think I have a little infection next to my nail. And he says, oh, well, if you were a doctor, you'd know to say it in Latin. It's paronychia. It's infection next to the nail. All they did was give this condition, this disease, they give it a name that is essentially the exact symptoms I described to them, but they say it in fancy Latin. All right. I think a lot of things are like that because there's plenty of times when, they don't even bother to translate it to Latin. All right, the first time I noticed this was oppositional defiant disorder. Yeah, you know what oppositional defiant disorder is characterized by? By someone who's oppositional and defiant. That's it. You go in, you take your kid in for a diagnosis, and you say, well, he's oppositional, he's defiant. We have a blah, 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 blah. And the doctor says, oh, well, it must be oppositional defiant disorder. by simply repeating back to you, parroting back to you the exact same symptoms you just described, he gets to go ahead and write it down as an official diagnosis, and you give him $200. Now, don't take this as me raging against doctors, because I'm not. This is actually just a natural consequence of how disease works, I think. But yeah, a lot of times it just really feels like, yeah, you know what? When you tell me that and you phrase it in fancy language, or better yet, in Latin, but all you're doing is repeating back the words I said to you, it's like, yeah, I could have diagnosed that. I mean, I woke up this morning thinking, okay, it's time to go to the doctor, because I'm looking at it going, it's an infection, it's under my nail, it won't go away, I need some antibiotics, and the only way I can get them is to go see my doctor. And so he goes in and he goes, hey, wow, it's an infection, it's under your nail, you need some antibiotics. Well, that's what I said. But he's a really, really nice guy. And every year when I go in for my yearly exam, this dude hands me up free samples, because I take some medication for my cholesterol, my blood pressure, and this kind of stuff. And I'm actually in really good health right now, other than being a little overweight. But he gives me free samples of the medications I take. And there's been times I've gone in, and he has given me literally $400 worth of medicine, just out of samples. It's stuff that, hey, this is the stock that's getting old. You're one of the favorite patients. And you know what? Before this expires, I'm just going to hand it all to you. Off you go. I love that crap. Oh, man, this is my favorite doctor ever. So whatever I spend on him to get the antibiotics for this thumb, he more than makes up for it in bonus perks. So in free medicines and stuff. I'm not going to complain about nothing. Great guy. But anyway, we were doing a Podomatic here. Let's go ahead and start. Thank you, R2. And R2 gives me a 91, and I have reshuffled the deck, so, because we were starting to get some duplicates before. So I've reshuffled, and 91 is Zimnipot asking, what is your favorite type of dragon? And he spells favorite with a U in it, so clearly he's asking about British dragons. My favorite kind of dragon has always been the pseudo-dragon, the little, very much like the Phil and Dixie mauve dragon. Mauve. It's a dragon, so you have to pronounce it A-U as ow, right? The classic Mauve dragon from the Phil and Dixie cartoon from Dragon Magazine way, way back. And I just like the pseudo-dragon. It's also the same kind of dragon that Lockheed was in the X-Men, and I still don't have any idea where Lockheed ever came from. I never paid that much attention to it. But Kitty Pryde had a little, basically a pseudo-dragon, a little miniature dragon that hung around on and sat on her shoulder like a cat, and because cats quite typically sit on your shoulder when you are walking around adventuring, fighting bad guys. That's where cats go, and this dragon was very much like that. So this is an easy one for me. Like I say, pseudo-dragon has always been my favorite. I don't even know what color they're supposed to be in Dungeons & Dragons. I don't even know if they still have a pseudo-dragon in Pathfinder. I know they have the fairy dragons, which see serve the same kind of purpose. I don't even know if the pseudo-dragon was a true dragon. But I've always pictured them as being this purplish mauve color, because that's what the one from Phil and Dixie was. That's what Lockheed was. They're just cool. Just a little tiny 2-foot-long dragon that sits on your shoulder like a pirate's parrot and thinks smart-ass comments at you, even though it can't actually talk, and then occasionally whips people with its venomous tail. You can't go wrong with that. The fairy dragons are close, but the fairy dragons come in multiple colors and have butterfly wings on them, so they are not nearly as badass as the pseudo-dragon. Other than that, if you want to talk full-size dragons, true dragons, I don't have a preference. I like anything that lives in a swamp, anything that has swamp as its natural habitat. So I like the green dragons and the which ones of the good dragons is that? Is that copper? Bronze? I can't remember. I think it's bronze dragons. So typically it's acid breath weapon, lives in the swamp. I dig that. That for some reason, I like that about dragons. But none of them can hold a candle to a pseudo-dragon. That was weird. That is number 24, again from Zimny. How much ketchup do you use? 1 is not at all. 5 is on all foods. I'll put it about a 2, but, I mean, if we're just talking a straight percentage of, you know, how many of my foods do I put ketchup on? You know, too. I mean, I use ketchup, but I don't put it on everything. Now, if you want to talk, where is my ketchup use in comparison to other people around me? My ketchup use is probably about a 4, proportionally speaking. I mean, I don't put it on everything, but when I do use ketchup, I love ketchup. I will put, I just had an omelet that I put a little ketchup on, because I thought about Tabasco, decided to put a little ketchup on top of it. It was really good. I'm very Canadian in that I put ketchup on my macaroni and cheese sometimes, but not always. I will put ketchup on just about anything potato. In fact, one of my favorite ways, leftover baked potatoes. I love to take leftover baked potatoes and then just cut them into slices and then dip them in ketchup. I love that. I'll do potato chips and ketchup. I eat a lot of ketchup. On my fish sandwiches, way rather do ketchup than tartar sauce. I think tartar sauce is nasty. Probably about a four would be a fair estimation in comparison to other people. I use a lot of ketchup. Number 86. Three in a row from Zimney. Zimney's got the hat trick. What makes Dan Harmon funny? Probably all the Kettle One. That's my best guess. I don't know the man personally. Dan Harmon, the creator of Community, creator of Rick and Morty, creator and mayor of the Harmontown podcast. Dan Harmon, writer of Monster House. He's got a bunch of credits. But Dan Harmon is just a funny guy, and I can't tell you exactly why, because when you listen to his podcast, one, he's drunk at least half the time. And if not drunk, he's on his way to it. So he's got an issue there. He's kind of a bully who is trying really, really hard not to bully anybody, because he wants to be a nice guy. And sometimes it's a little bit hard for him. He stammers a lot. His brain obviously gets way ahead of his mouth more than I do. I mean, I can hear myself doing it sometimes, but I mean, he will. I have listened to his podcast where him and Jeff are trying to get something out, and Dan will stand there and like a good 30 straight seconds. And yet when he does it, it's endearing. It's endearing, and you listen and you're like, okay, you're getting to it. Come on. Oh, the thought is right there. It's not, you would think that would get really annoying because they don't edit any of it out and he just goes. But you know he's going somewhere with it. And the thing I like about his podcast, at least, I can't talk Community. I think Community is brilliant. Community is a genius of a show, one of the best there ever is. But I can't speak to his method of creating that one. What I find so funny about his podcast is it is unscripted. And so there's some stuff in it that's amiss, some of it that's, you know, okay, I see where you're going. Okay, yeah, we've done this stuff before. But then every single episode has several laugh-out-loud moments that you just... And they're made funnier by the fact that you know they just made that crap up on the fly as they were going. They're just jerking around, and the funny just comes out of these situations. And so it feels like, to me, and I think what I enjoy about it so much, is to me it feels like sitting around with my friends and getting that natural reaction, the kind of magic that I know I harp on about the Animal Ball podcast a lot. But when Kyle and I were on the mics for Animal Ball, it was just the two of us back and forth with each other. And we had a chemistry that just fed off of each other. And even when we had nothing scripted, or half scripted was a lot of what we did, we were funny, and we would bounce off of each other. And really, I mean, I can be funny on this podcast sometimes, but it's not the same thing. I'm not, there's a magic to having that mix of people who can build on each other's funny and make the points more important. And so when I listen to Dan Harmon, it feels the same way to me. It feels like just sitting around with my friends, except I don't actually get to actively participate in the Harmontown podcast, but it's that kind of humor that comes out of it, and it entertains the crap out of me. I love Harmontown. I love Dan Harmon. All right. Number 31. Rolling up to Zimney again. What do you call 4 in a row? 3 is a hat trick. What's 4? It's a 4-peat. Zimney asks, which is the worst weather you'd ever experienced? The worst weather I've ever experienced is, oh man, there's so many to choose from. I once drove through a blizzard on my way to spring break. That's not the worst, but we were on our way to spring break, like literally driving from Nebraska to Florida. And in Florida, it's going to be 80, 90 degrees all week long. And it was gorgeous. And we sat on the beaches and we had a great time. It was a beautiful spring break. So much fun. And on the way to Florida, to the 90 degree beaches and beautiful weather, on the way there, drove through the worst blizzard I've ever gone through. Right as we got to St. Louis, and it was horrifying. It was so horrifyingly bad that we had to stop. We had to pull over and find a cheap-ass dinky motel 8 miles off the interstate where we paid like $30 for the night and packed six of us in there because it was six of us in three cars because we were friggin' idiots and gas was only like 12 cents a gallon back then, which is an exaggeration. It was actually like 90 cents a gallon, but even still, you get my point. That's dirt cheap. And we were on the interstate going through St. Louis and they had three lanes going eastbound and there was a giant snowplow covering each of those three lanes. And each one was about 40 feet, 50 feet back from the one in the next lane over. So the one in the far left lane is leading. He's kicking up all this snow that kicks up in this huge shower and lands smack in the middle of the center lane. So the next snowplow, 50 feet behind him, is grabbing all that same snow, except now there's twice as much of it, and kicking it all over to the next lane. And then that guy kicks it off the road. And they're doing all this at about 25 miles an hour on the interstate, which means, well, we can't drive 25 miles per hour, and yet they're covering all three lanes, so you can't stay here forever. So we drove through it. We drove through to pass them, and I mean, literally blind for 30 seconds going through what seemed like 10 minutes and probably was only 10 seconds, but I'm going to say 30 seconds. Totally blind with this sheet, this wall of snow falling on us to cut through. Terrible, terrible, terrible weather. Well, we should have stopped miles before we did. It was dangerous. I'm so glad nobody died. I mean, we got to the point where when we decided to finally stop was when we were pulling over every 15 minutes because we had to get out and chip the ice off of our windshield wipers. It was horrifying. But the worst I've been in was being at a scout camp with tornadoes on the ground. We were at Camp Cedars, and great camp, wonderful, but just a few years earlier, they had had the tornado hit Little Sioux, which is, you know, about an hour and a half from Camp Cedars, so not far away at all. And Little Sioux, when the tornadoes came through, scouts died, and it was horrible. And so here we are in Camp Cedars, and there's tornadoes spotted, tornadoes on the ground, like just a few miles from us. I mean, it was close. And so we were luckily in the dining hall when it happened. And so we packed into the basement of the dining hall, which was a tornado shelter. And so we were fortunately safe down there, but it was packed, packed front to back. And we had, you know, the two brave staff people who were kept heading up top to bring down pitchers of water so we could pass water back, because otherwise people wouldn't have made it back there. And while all that's going on, I can't get any cell reception, so I can't talk to my family, but my family is at home worried about us, and they have their own tornado warning going on 150 miles away, and that wasn't 150, it's only like 90 miles away, but they had their own tornado warning going on, so my family is sitting in the basement with one of the children who was scared of tornadoes throwing up. But at Camp Cedars, could have been worse. As horrible as that was, because we were there for a long time, as horrible as that was, if we had been in our camps at the time that it happened, the tornado procedure, if you are in camp when the sirens go off, is you crawl underneath the wooden platforms that the tents are sitting on. Yeah, that's your protection. You're sitting on a slight slope with a wooden platform over you. And like I say, it's these giant, you know, 10-foot square wooden platforms so that they're raised up so that the tents can be permanently mounted on there. It keeps them out of the water if bad weather does happen. So what that means is that's your safe spot. It's underneath the platform. But everything is on a frickin' hill, so when it starts raining heavy, you're laying under the platform with water and mud cascading down over you the entire time. And we got to talk to a bunch of scouts afterwards who had to do exactly that for the 2 hours of this tornado warning. It's horrifying, terrible. That was actually that experience was the inspiration for the game I wrote called Terror at Camp Pinewood, because Terror at Camp Pinewood features a lot of water and a lot of flooding and a lot of rain, because that is some scary, scary stuff when you're at a camp. Now, because of the Little Sioux incident and because of this incident, they have now built new tornado shelters all around both of these camps, and they are not nearly so scary and dangerous during a tornado. Still not a place you want to be, but they've made a lot of improvements as a result of these, and things are much better there. So, number 34. Not Zimney Pot. Take that, Zim. It's from Serious Paul, who says, Qbert versus Sonic. Who wins? Oh, Sonic. You know what? I like Qbert better. I would love for Qbert to win. But come on. Qbert can jump on you. That's about it. And could he even jump on you? I don't even think he could. I think if he jumped on you, he died. I mean, really? Qbert's ability is to hop from square to square and try not to get hit, whereas Sonic at least has some action cred and some storyline. As much as I may think Sonic is pretty lame, I mean, he'd take this one. Number 18. This is from Zimney again. Zimney says, what is your favorite type of Star Wars alien? Star Wars aliens? I don't know. I have a problem with Star Wars aliens in general, because most of them are single characteristic type races. I like Yoda's race, which is officially known as Yoda's race. And I would like to know more about them as a people. And, yeah, no, you know what? You know what? I'm good on Wookiees, too. I like Wookiees. I feel like Wookiees have a little bit of personality because we got to meet Chewbacca and we got to know a lot about him. I mean, I still feel like they're kind of one note, but, you know, you've got Star Wars races that are, you know, ooh, here's our Star Wars race that's a stand-in for the Jews. Here's our Star Wars race that's a stand-in for Imperial Japanese. Here's our Star Wars race. And they're all so stereotypical in one note that in general, I have a lot of problem with them. And not that other genres or venues are much better. I mean, good Lord. Yes. Dwarves are stoic and live under mountains. And I mean, every dwarf has basically the same personality. All elves in every frickin' fantasy setting, all elves are token elves, and all of them are, you know, a little bit haughty and good with their bows and arrows, and they live in the trees, and they're all the same. And I much prefer the idea that you live in a world where a race may seem a little more X compared to humanity on average, but in reality, they're just as varied within their, you know, the constraints of their ability modifiers and special abilities and environment and all that. But they're just as varied as humans are, just as likely to be good or evil, or just as likely to be... Yeah, I would rather see a lot more variance, which I don't see in Star Wars aliens. So therefore, yeah, like I say, Yoda's race, since he's the only example of it, it would be nice to know more about them. I mean, they intrigue me. And there's lots of stuff about... Oh, and Twi'leks. Twi'leks, I got a thing about Twi'leks that, again, they're stereotypical. Look, their women are gorgeous and typically subjugated by the men. I mean, their women are to a person, they are supposed to be porn star gorgeous, and exude sexuality, while their men are all ogres. All of them are ugly half-orcs, every single one of them. And there's this sexual dichotomy that they probably thought they were exploring, or maybe it was just an accident when it happened that they created male Twi'leks that happened to be. And by the way, Twi'leks are the ones with the, the huge tentacle tail things coming off the backs of their heads. And we've seen examples of them that break this stereotype. There's the one female Twi'lek Jedi who gets a lot of play on posters and stuff, but I don't know what her name is. Someone can tell me. And I find the Twi'leks fascinating because I think that in a more developed world, they could be fascinating. There's something about them. But, yeah, in general, Star Wars aliens aren't my favorite. All right. Number 60. 60 is from Kyle. Kyle says, what is a Skrillex? And why will my kids not shut up about it? They say it's something they've dubbed, he puts in quotes, they've dubbed stepping on something. But I don't know what they're talking about. Is this some kind of new nonstick cooking surface? Well, not really. I mean, it's still just using Teflon. But the Skrillex is a brand name of pans that supposedly it's, you know, it's Teflon Mark II or however it is that they're referring to it, that supposedly is, you know, so nonstick that even five geckos won't stick to it or something like that. But yes, it's cookware. Number 56. What can we do to make zip codes cooler? They suck right now. How can we make them sexier? Tell you what. Every zip code is assigned to a mythological creature. All right? So specifically, let's say all of the... And we could even categorize them out. So you kind of get an idea of the general area of the country just by the nature of the beast. All right. And so, for example, all of the zip codes that start with a 4 are reptilian of some sort. And if it's, 4-8, then, okay, now we're in dragon territory. If we're in, and it kind of all narrows down until, finally when you get to your one personal locality, you've narrowed it down all the way through, okay, it's a hybrid beast, chimera. We're down to, okay, it's a griffin. And once you get to the actual local city, it's a griffin whose name is Chuck. All right? And then everyone has their own. And Chuck, of course, would be specifically colored so that he would be easily recognizable from all the other griffins, because there would be, like, at least 40 municipalities that have griffins as their zip code. So you would need to know the difference between, well, Chuck has the longer mane and more of a tawny, lionish color, while Percy has more of the feathers across the neck ruff and a little more pinkish in color. Not that I'm implying anything about feathers pinkish. It's not like a feather boa, because Percy's a more effeminate name. I'm not implying that. Those were just the first colors that came to my mind. Things like that. That would... In fact, once it was all said and done, I think would actually not make them cooler or sexier in any way, because really it's all just complicated, and I think it would make the test to become a postman that much harder. Number 51 from Zimney, and this one says, have you ever played a monster character in a normal setting, with normal in quotes? I don't know what normal means in this, but if you're talking about playing a standard Pathfinder or D&D game where you're playing the usual suspects, elves, dwarves, halflings, gnomes, half-orcs, humans, and a generally good selection of people, and then you throw in a monster character to go along with it, I myself have never played such a character. I have, however, had my cousin Rob once played a centaur in one of our groups, which was bizarre, but it worked out roughly. And currently, my second son, Aiden, is playing a goblin in a group that is made up of mostly good people. But, the other two characters are an elf and a half-orc, but they're good and just caught in a bad situation, and my son is playing an evil goblin bard who has wound up, because he's the bard and he's so charming, has wound up being the face of the group. I mean, he's the voice of the group. The evil guy is the one who's speaking for everybody because he's the one who's good at it. And he's sticking with them because, well, they're trapped down here and he needs to get out of here. And he kind of likes these guys. I mean, they seem to be loyal, and they'll work with him and they'll help him achieve his goals. So why is he going to go stabbing them in the back? I mean, maybe someday, but you know, for right now, it's working out well for him. But he also is clearly evil and has done some evil things. And the other guys have a little problem with it, but, oh, he's charming and he kind of talks his way out of it and he does really well with it. So I enjoy that. Now a goblin is hardly a full on monster, but I mean, it is a monster. It's a traditionally evil character that is almost always thrown up as a minor league foe for the good guys. And here he is taking it on as a serious role. So he's doing very well with it, and I really enjoy that process. My brother has played, and this is not your standard Pathfinder fantasy setting, but my brother once played a spider-like robot in a paranoia game where all the other characters are playing normal human clones, and my brother showed up to the game as part of the equipment crate. So he shows up as just equipment, and it wasn't, you know, until a little ways on that the other players realized, because we played it all by email, it wasn't until later that the others realized that, hey, there's a player behind that. Oh, I get it now. And it was fascinating. We never did finish that game. That was one of the ones that we got. That one we only got about halfway through and then bailed on it. And then we have another game that we played that we got almost to the end. I mean, like, literally just almost done, and then bailed on it right at the last second. And I think that was right before I opened up Nerd Pride. I'm sorry, I'm completely off topic. But no, I have never played a monster character in a normal setting, but I have seen it done to brilliant effect, in my opinion. And I've heard of other people doing it in ways that, I mean, if you listen to, what's the name of the podcast? Fear the Boot. Fear the Boot will often tell the story of their campaign. They did where Dan was playing a gnoll and then wound up having a gnoll posse with him, and had some very interesting character development and real logical, justifiable reasons for why they were all together. And they played it out beautifully, and it sounds like an absolutely fascinating story. So it can happen, and it can happen well.